Okay, Jason, go ahead. The floor is yours.
Okay, thanks, Louisa. Yeah, this is my second share in a space of a month. It's definitely not what I had in mind for April or any other month, come to think of it. But yeah, so I'll just try and bumble through it as best I can. My mind has a tendency of going blank during main shares, so there may well be some gaps. Yeah, but I've been in recovery since 2017. Been sober for, I don't know, about a year and 4 months, something like that now, maybe more. My life's definitely improved. I'm not feeling particularly grateful today. Having a bit of a bumpy week. But even through that, fog of low level grumpiness, I can still honestly say that my life has improved, immeasurably, really, since getting into AA and then getting into TAS NUA. I mean, my background, yeah, I always liked drinking drugs. I mean, yeah, just felt comfortable in my skin, but, I've been naturally sort of quite quiet and shy, so yeah, substances always helped, make me more kind of outgoing. I thought, back then I thought that's what I needed to be, really, to sort of get on in life, socially and career wise, and with meeting women or whatever it was. I thought, I thought being quiet, shy, and retiring doesn't really set you up very well. But I mean, these days I'm, I definitely I'm quite happy to not be larger than life, and I'm no longer drawn to larger than life characters either. I mean, that has definitely been a problem for me with my sort of, I suppose, more codependent side of behavior, with being drawn to these larger than life characters who might have been great fun and blindingly intelligent, but they weren't necessarily particularly trustworthy or reliable. So that's definitely something which I avoid these days, and I might talk a bit more about that later on. I've got some notes here. I mean, early recovery, I was relapsing, quite regularly, sort of on a weekly then monthly basis. And then when I started doing the steps, I did manage to put together much longer stretches of sobriety. But there were still relapses. The steps weren't, I'd done my steps with a traditional sponsor, and certain steps weren't entirely clear to me. And steps two and three, particularly, six and seven, were pretty tricky as well. But since getting into secular and reading the Geoffrey Munn book, it's just so much more simple now. Not having to decode that pseudo mystical language is, I'm just so grateful for that. Early recovery, I mean, they did say in the rooms, maybe don't focus on work or relationships in the first year. So I definitely wasn't in the mood for focusing on relationships. That was the last thing on my mind. But work I did, for me, I found that was immensely beneficial, because I've always quite enjoyed gardening, and I spent by the first year or two, I spent, just building up my client base for self-employed work, because I ended up with a criminal record, and so I was, technically sort of unemployable, and in a great deal of anxiety about my future. I was really sick to the teeth of working with toxic people, either employees or colleagues or whatever. So in the end, the criminal record turned out to be one of the greatest things that ever happened, really, because it forced me to go down the self-employed route. And I just, yeah, I picked up clients slowly at first, but then it kind of, it gained momentum with word of mouth and stuff. And I've got a nice client base now. And I've got a pretty zero tolerance policy with toxic people. If a client starts rubbing me up the wrong way, they just, they just get ignored or blocked on the phone. I just can't be dealing with it, because that has contributed to relapses in the past. And yeah, I think I, in terms of boundaries like that with toxic people, I started doing that with clients before my recovery gained momentum, and I started having much better boundaries with friends, and particularly with a group of school friends, which I'm still just about in contact with. There was one friend, I mean, he's dead now. He died of cirrhosis and complications with that, and COVID, and I think it was sepsis in the end that got him. So he was my old drinking buddy. I'd drawn a line with him before I got into sobriety, actually. I had enough wherewithal, but as the fog began to clear, I realized that there was another friend, James, who I'd just always kind of assumed that he would be, I'm an only child, so I think that contributed, that complicated the codependency with this group of friends. I thought, well, I haven't got any brothers or sisters, but these folks, they're kind of my siblings, and it slowly, it painfully slowly became apparent that they weren't, that was just a delusion. That was something which I deeply wanted, but this group of people did not really fit my requirements for that, in terms of trust and mutual respect, really, which got a bit of bedrock. So yeah, during so yeah, there's one friend there which has been firmly defriended, and I do believe that that's a very good decision which I've made, which is only come in time, really, for really realizing how toxic that relationship was. And in recovery, I've made firm friends, here and elsewhere, that I feel that these people really do have my back, and there is mutual trust and respect there. And with that old group of school friends, it was always felt like I was watching my back. You couldn't, any sign of vulnerability, the knife would tend to go in, and so I'm not so concerned about that these days. I mean, showing vulnerability or frailty and less than perfect sides of our behavior is all part and parcel of this process and this community. So yeah, I'm really glad that that exists. So I talked about work, about gardening. That was good for me. I realized that I soon came to the realize that 3 days work was the optimum level for me in terms of work-life balance, for keeping me sane. I found that anything less than 3 days paid work a week, I would have too much time on my hands. And if I started doing 4 or more days work a week, then I was just getting too stressed. So I've settled on I settled on 3 days sort of fairly early on, and I've stuck with that. That still suits me now. I mean, money's not too much of a stress at the moment. I mean, I may have to up my work at some point, you know, if money becomes more of a stress. But this is what I'm doing at the moment. And also, gardening was and remains sort of my main hobby. So that's sort of redoing the front garden, and there's this derelict. There was this semi-derelict space behind our house, which I turned into a sort of a wildflower type, you know, trees and stuff there. And well, to be fair, it's been mostly digging out ivy and removing fly-tipped rubbish and stuff. So that's about my fourth year now doing that, and it's really coming together, and the neighbors seem to like it as well. Actually, there's one neighbor there who never really used to speak to me, but he came around a couple of days ago because his garage is sort of just on the corner of the thing, and so he came round, and he was really impressed with it. It really kind of made my day, because he'd always been a bit kind of distant and sort of a little bit. I don't know, I always thought he'd been a little bit off, but yeah, I couldn't believe it when he came around. So the hobby, that's been, yeah, because I mean drinking and drugging, they were pretty much my hobby, you know, so I needed to find something that really occupied my time. And I really the early days, I thought, oh, I wonder if I could sort of kid myself into getting addicted to gardening. And then it actually happened a lot quicker than I thought it possibly could. So I'm quite glad that you know, neuroplasticity and all that, you know, the brain can be quite adaptable to different things. And I think if you're of an obsessive compulsive type mindset like I am, then yeah, it's surprising how much wiggle room there is. If you find something that you like a little bit, if you stick with it, then yeah, maybe it can become kind of all consuming. And yeah, and I do have to watch myself, because I can tend to sort of like work through my lunch break, or you know, I should be taking a break, and so I have to be careful of that. I can push it a bit too far. Yeah, I just keep that in mind, and it's more healthy than unhealthy, I think. But saying that, I mean, this week I've been a bit flat. I had toothache on Monday because I've not been using my interdental brushes as thoroughly as I should have been. So, yeah, got home Monday night and got stuck in, and then yeah, found the root of the problem. And yeah, so it's been a couple of days of ibuprofen, and I haven't had any ibuprofen for a day or more now. But yeah, it's just kind of knocked my energy levels sideways a bit. I kind of feel it sort of through my jaw and almost into my ear as well. So yeah, just trying to sort of take it easy this week, really. And also, I've been aware that, you know, I am overly reliant on gardening and cycling as my sort of main kind of hobbies. And I'm just thinking, what can I do to mix things up? But I've not been picking up the phone as much as I should be. So keeping in contact with some people which I've not spoken to for a while, that's definitely on the list to do this week or over the weekend. And I was thinking yesterday while I was at work, what else can I do to sort of get out of this bit of a funk that I'm in? And I thought about handing out some gardening flyers, because I've had a client that died last year, and then there's another one that's gone AWOL. I think she's back on the drink again, actually. So I thought, you know, what can I do that's just different from the usual things that I do to try and, you know, sort of make myself feel okay? And I thought, well, yeah, hand out some flyers. So I've not had to do that for about 5 years because I've been so busy with work. But my realization was that the handing the flyers out wasn't really with the primary purpose of getting more clients. It was with the primary purpose, really, of doing something different with my day than the usual things that I do in my day. And it can be very easy for me to slip into a misanthropic kind of mindset, and just avoiding people. But if I'm out on the street handing out flyers in a nice neighborhood, then at least I'm engaging with people, and it forces me, literally forces me into a more congenial frame of mind. And I find that, yeah, it's been years since I've done it, but you know, it can be a nice thing to do. You know, so that's also on my list of things to do sometime in the next week. Let me just have a look back to my notes. Oh yeah, so family. I mean, during recovery, I've really rebuilt a very good relationship with my mum, because that was quite fractious from like teenage years onwards. And yeah, I can honestly say that we're really, really close now, and I can actually talk to her, you know, pretty much like a friend. And there's real understanding, you know, and connection there. I mean, my dad has been very tricky. He's just been a very tricky character my entire life. He's bipolar, and it's just a he doesn't really have much empathy for other people. And so I find, you know, I feel guilty that I can't, you know, that I don't make more effort communicating with him. But I know deep down that it's kind of impossible, because he's on another planet, and that there's just not much empathy there. So it's difficult to empathize with someone that has no empathy, I suppose it's a long short fit. So I do feel guilty that my mum sort of, you know, does the majority of the work with him, because he's got Alzheimer's now, and so she's his main caretaker. But I did have a conversation with her yesterday morning, just briefly. I said, you know, I do feel guilty that I can't help you more, but I just know that when I go near him, I just tend to go straight into rage. And then I'd be screaming at him, and then my mum's blood pressure would be going up, and it's just counterproductive. And so it felt good to just clear the air like that. I mean, my mum knows that that's what the score is with me and him. It's just good to sort of just be reminded that she, you know, that is the case. Let me just have a quick look, see if there's anything else. Oh, yeah, sponsors. Yeah, I don't have a sponsor at the moment. I mean, I think my last relapse was, you know, sometime in late 2022, and I called up a friend, and she said, you know, don't you think it's about time you maybe got a secular sponsor? Maybe that would help. And so, yeah, you're probably right. So, you know, I parted ways with my traditional sponsor amicably, and we're still in contact a bit, and I got a secular sponsor, which worked out really well for, you know, getting clarity on steps two and three. So that was good, kind of completing the circle, because I've done all the later steps and that. But then we had a falling out. I mean, I took all his suggestions except for one. Engaged into this, perhaps ill-advised, sort of romantic relationship, and he was really adamant that I shouldn't. And I said, well, you know, whether it works out or not, I've got to give it a go. And so I gave it a go, and he was right, it didn't work out. But I said to him, you know, I'm glad I gave it a go anyhow. And he just wouldn't have it. He was just furious that I didn't take his suggestion. And then he started shouting at me over the Zoom call, and all this controlling behavior. And I don't know what was going on with him that day, but I ended up hanging up on him. And then the next day he apologized and said, well, fair enough, apology accepted, but can't really carry on with you as a sponsor now after that. And it's just, I mean, he was saying things like your whole life's a disaster and stuff like that. And stuff like that. I mean, you know, it might be some level of truth to that, but it's not really anything you should ever be hearing from a sponsor. It's not really constructive feedback. And I suppose really with him, the alarm bell should have started going off from day one, because he did say, if you, he said that classic line, if you follow all my suggestions, you need never drink again. It should have been like, woo, 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 God, get the fuck out of here. But anyhow, yes, anyhow, so that's that's done and dusted, and I'm without a sponsor at the moment, and I think I'm getting near the end. But I, just a closing word on sponsorship. There's a newcomer that I've been in contact with for about a month, and I've asked him a couple of times. Have you found anyone that you might want to ask to be a sponsor? And it's not really answered. And then yesterday on text, he mentioned, he said, yeah, I should really think about getting a sponsor. And I'd done that thing that you're really not supposed to do. They do say, like, if anyone is asking, if any sponsor comes up to you saying, I'll be your sponsor, then run a mile. But I did actually, I sort of hummed and hawed about it at work, but I thought I think maybe he wants me to be his sponsor. So I texted him and said, I'm happy to sponsor you if you want. And I've not heard back from him. He's like, I've not got the blue ticks yet. So I think he's back on the drink. But anyhow, I don't feel any regret doing that. But feel free to chastise me if you so wish when you share back. So anyhow, I'll leave it there. Thanks for asking me, Louisa.